We'll hear about a world-class multi-multi antenna farm in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with the December 16 rain report. This week we bring you a most unique approach to what would normally be an audio-video presentation. It has been said that a picture tells 1,000 words. In this case, however, you'll have to use your imagination to picture a truly amazing antenna farm. It belongs to world-class contester Tim Duffy, K3LR. While you can't visualize what Tim's phenomenal multi-multi contest station looks like, put your mind's eye to work and absorb what Tim's description is of his 10-acre Midwestern ham station. Here's Tim Duffy, K3LR, as excerpted from his 2017 Dayton Hamvention Forum Talk.
I'm going to tell you a little story today about my radio life of K3LR, which is about 45 years long, and it started in my bedroom. A year after I got my novice license, I was a general class license. Once I discovered contesting at a field day, I was hooked. Like many of you, that was my first introduction. K3LR is about as far west in Zone 5 as you can get. It is right up against the Ohio-Pennsylvania border, equidistant between Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Akron, and Erie, Pennsylvania. It's exactly 1 mile away from the border. And the northern part of the property happens to front on Interstate 80. Back in 1991, I got a knock at the door, and it was RA3AUU. This was just when the Russians started to travel over here for Dayton, and I was stunned to see a Russian at my door, and I couldn't tell my neighbors at that point. Actually, UA3AB was with him, too. It was a good time. But over the years, many people have stopped to say hello on their travels on Interstate 80. One of the things that makes this QTH work is how the drop-off occurs. And I did not know this when I bought the property. I bought the property back in 1987. Things like HFTA were not around. But there was a famous DXer that lived in the Pittsburgh area. Some of you may remember W3CRA. W3CRA used to have an outstanding signal into Southeast Asia and other DX locations when others could not be heard. He had a tremendous drop-off in that direction. So going to Europe, the QTH drops off about 300 feet to a riverbed, and likewise to Japan. It's pretty flat going to the other directions. It's not particularly high, but it is that 300-foot drop-off that is the real secret to the fact that we do well to Europe and Japan. There are 13 towers. 8 of the towers comprise the 80-meter vertical array. This station was built over that period of time from 1987 through today, and multi-multi since 1992. Tom talked about receiving arrays being very important. They're vital to the health of a multi-multi that wants to have two radios on a band. We have two full-size four squares that you would use to transmit on. One is for 10 and one is for 20 meters. They look weird because they're very small in their footprints, but they are very effective for the second station to hear while the CQing station is on the air. There's a 160-meter five-element array. That's a three-element vertical Yagi that has been featured in the ON4UN book, the last three editions. It has 5 dB of gain off the front of it and about 30 dB of front to back. There are a pair of 80-meter four squares. These are full-size elements, broadside on Europe, and it's just like stacking Yagis. You get 3 dB more gain. And then the tall tower is the 40-meter tower. The top antenna is at 275 feet. In the middle of the property is the 15-meter run stack. That's a stack of 4 7-element Yagis. And then the 10-meter 4-high stack is on its own tower, 32 elements. And then the second tallest tower is the 20-meter tower, which has its top antenna 245 feet. So let's take a look at some of the hardware. This is the 40-meter tower. It has 3 full-size 4-element OWA Yagis, the WA3FET designed. And it has 4 10-meter antennas on it. It has 2 20-meter antennas on it. It has a 160-meter horizontal Waller flag on it, 138 square feet of wind load on one tower. And it's all engineered that way. It's a pie rod tower. It's a 24-inch face. I live very close to the neighbors, and I get along very well with the neighbors. That's a critical element in the success of this multi-multi. Here's another photo of the bottom part of that tall tower. There's a six-element 20-meter beam there at 150 feet, and right above it, it looks like a 15-meter beam. That is the pair of Waller flags that are horizontal. This is the N4IS top beam antenna at 165 feet, and sometimes that is the best receiving antenna for 160 meters. It's not always. We have a lot of different antennas for 160 to receive on, but this has been an effective antenna at times. I'm a big fan of ring rotors. I have a lot of TIC ring rotors as well as some K0XG ring rotors, but all but one Yagi is mounted on a ring rotor on the side of the tower. The top antennas are rotated with K7NV prop pitches. This is the 20-meter tower. The 40-meter tower and the 20-meter tower both have FAA lighting and painting because they exceed the 200-foot limit. At 245 feet is a 80-meter dipole. It's got shortened coils in it, so it's about 106 feet long, and there are steps that go up the mast, so I can climb that 3-inch mast to get to it. There's a tornado coil in the middle of that dipole that allows us to tune anywhere between 3.5 and 3.9 megahertz. And then that's one of the six-element 20-meter beams. There are four six-element 20-meter beams on this tower, and this is the top one at 230 feet. This is looking down the tower. There are a pair of Moxens for 40 meters on here, one at 185 feet and one at 120 feet. And this is what the second station on 40 meters uses for transmitting antennas. There are two 15-meter beams for the second station on here as well. You can see the two 20-meter beams designed by WA3FET at 170 feet over 110 feet. That's the middle two Yagis. A lot of antennas on one tower, very carefully engineered so they don't interact with each other.
You're listening to the audio portrait of a truly unique ham station that was voiced at the 2017 Dayton Hamvention by Tim Duffy, K3LR, a Mega Sirius Midwestern contester. We'll conclude our excerpt from his forum talk in a moment. This is the Rain Report, downloadable and streamed from therainreport.com and heard Saturdays at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time on the 150,000-watt Lebanon, Tennessee blowtorch WTWW on 5085 kilohertz. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
This is a shot of the 10-meter array. It starts at 135 feet, and it's got four 8-element Yagis on it. You'll notice there are no insulators on these guy wires. These are all fiberglass guy wires used to hold these things up, and so you don't have to worry about insulators. This is the 160-meter antenna. It starts with a driven element that's 120 feet tall. And then we put four parasitic elements that surround the 120-foot tower. Those parasitics are T's. They're T's made out of wire, and they are dropped from the top of the driven element. And so in this case, the two yellow elements are used to point to Europe. The right-hand element is grounded as a director, so all four of these are cut as directors. And then the left-hand yellow element is a reflector in this case, so simply by putting a coil in series with it, it becomes a reflector. And then the two blue elements are floated, so they're invisible in this case. So you get a reflector, a driven element, and a director, and you get a three-element vertical beam that can be switched in four different directions. And there's a lot of ground radials that go on here. This is under the driven element. This is the pie rod tower that I feed with 1 5/8 on 160 meters. It is almost 1,500 feet away from the shack, so we had to have some low-loss cable here. over the period of almost 30 years that this tower has been up, I have put in additional ground systems. There are now 300 radials underneath the driven element. The parasitic wires also require full radial systems as they operate as verticals. Here's the ground systems that are for the 80-meter verticals. These are converted high towers. So it's basically take a high tower, strip all of the stubs off of it, and increase the length of the high tower. Each one of these high towers is now resonant by themselves at 3.51 megahertz, not up at 3.8, because they have to be longer to be used in a four-square array. But I take ground systems very seriously. When I was in high school and starting out in college, I was a broadcast engineer and fortunately got to learn a lot about creating ground systems, and that's what I used to build these. Here are the four verticals in the center of the array. My good friend Greg Ordy, W8WWV, has spent many weekends helping me tweak and tune these arrays. This is the 20-meter four-square that we use exclusively on the second station on 20 meters. It, too, has full complements of radials, but you can see the elements are much shorter. But it is a full-size 20-meter four-square. This is the 15-meter four-square used by the second station on 15, and you can see just how close the neighbors are at K3LR. This is about as good a shot as I can get of the 8-circle array. This is a high-Z 8-circle that is used on 160 and on 80 meters. This is the inside of the 8-circle control box. There are actually two sides to this control box, 160 meters and 80 meters, so that the array can be pointed in any direction by either operator without the other operator knowing about it. There's also a full complement of chokes to make sure that all the feed lines going to all the elements are choked cold. There is a modification to the high-Z preamps that I made that we do not deliver DC power through the same cable that we receive the signal on. So there are also a full complement of chokes for the DC power as well. Basically, this array goes dead cold once you get above 4 megahertz so that it can survive in a multi-multi transmitter environment. This high-Z 8-circle array has replaced all the beverages at K3LR, and it has worked out very well for us. This is the front of the K3LR house. This house was built in 1865. It was not the house that impressed me when I bought this place. It was the land. My very good friend and multi-multi mentor, Frank Donovan, had 10 acres, and this was 10 acres, and I said, I'll take it. But through the years, we've modified the house. I did not know when I bought the house that it did not have heat upstairs, and certainly things like electric and water and gas have all been added since the house was built. We have our own 50 kW transformer from the Pennsylvania Power Company. When I originally started operating multi-multi, I was sharing a transformer with my neighbor. It was 15 kW. And once Sunday came around, you could see that the line voltage was starting to sag. So the power company was very nice and put in our own 50 kW. In case that goes away, we have our own Chevy V8 Kohler 50 kW natural gas generator. These radio contests are serious things, and if we lose power, it doesn't mean that W3LPL and WE3C go off the air, so we have to make sure that we can be back up, and this brings us back online in 10 seconds. This is a shot of the radio room. When I built this radio room, I thought it might be single op and maybe some multi-singles, and my very good friend Scotty, N3RA, said, why don't we try multi-multi? And so in a 30-foot by 30-foot room, we have 11 operators, 11 operating positions, two for each band, 80 through 10, and one on 160. Although this summer that will change and we'll get a second position on 160 meters.
And that concludes our experiment of bringing a sound description of the world-class contest station, voiced by and belonging to Tim Duffy, K3LR. We excerpted his 2017 Daytonhamvention presentation. Now that you've heard about Tim's station, go see what you can see on YouTube. And it's really spectacular. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2017 Rain, all rights reserved. Now for all of you with the 160-meter Waller flags flying over your city lot, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from all of us with RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com, and heard 9 p.m. Saturdays on WTWW, Lebanon, Tennessee, on 5085 kilohertz. That's 5085. Keep on hamming.